Hey, what's up? Hello. Welcome to Sounds Fake But Okay, a podcast where an arrow ace girl. I'm Sarah, that's me.
And a bi demisexual girl, that's me, Kayla.
And I am Michael Klein. I am a demi ace driver in the Arkham and Art series and in several other divisions of racing.
Woo! Where we talk about all things to do with love, relationships, sexuality, and pretty much anything else we just don't understand.
On today's episode, racing.
Sounds fake, but okay. Welcome back to the pod.
Hello, everyone, and hello to our very special guest, Michael, who we've been trying to have on for what may be years now, and it's finally happening. Centuries even, and it's finally time.
It is happening.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on here. I know it's been a while in the works, but I'm very glad David J. introduced me to you guys, and it's awesome to finally be on here and telling my story.
Yeah, subtle flex that we all know David J. So everyone be really jealous of us. It's whatever. But yeah, we're very excited. This is like, we've had like a lot of guests on from a lot of different walks of life. And I feel like racing is the like area I know least about out of like everyone we've had on. So I'm very excited to learn more.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. I've got quite a bit of knowledge about it. So
I would hope so. It'd be a little concerning if you didn't.
Yeah. There are people like that, unfortunately.
Damn.
Oh, boy. All right.
Call them out.
You heard it here first, kids. Do we want to just dive in? Do we have any housekeeping? Literati event June 30th. That's all. All
right. Yeah, come see us. Find it on the internet. Great. Yeah, I know you already did like a short little intro to everyone, but do you want to kind of give like your formal, like your little pitch of who you are?
Yeah, so basically, I'm a race car driver across several divisions. Namely, we're looking at doing the Arkham Menard series this year, which is the first division of NASCAR. And, you know, we've been hard at work trying to make that happen. But when I'm not doing that, I'm just kind of racing in several other divisions. So some of the series I race in are sprint cars, midgets, late models. So there's quite a few different divisions that we run here. And just the fact that I have the opportunity to come out here and be probably the first openly ace driver is truly special. And if I can do anything to help the community through that, I'm more than happy to do so.
Hell yeah.
I love it. The aces are infiltrating everywhere.
Oh, yes.
We're taking over every sport and every career.
Everything.
And everything.
Oh, yeah, we're coming.
We're coming everywhere. No, wait.
Well, some.
Well, some. Wait. Wait a second.
Why don't we start with your aceness, and then we can dive into how it intersects with the racing and the things you do. How did you realize you were ace? And you said demi as well, right?
Yeah, I consider myself demi romantic asexual.
Okay.
So basically, I came to find that out just because in high school, I really didn't develop any crushes on anybody. I was never in a relationship and still have never been in a relationship. And I never really knew there was a word for that. So, you know, I just kind of rolled with it and kind of played it down low. And then I think it was like my first year in college, I watched a video where this one YouTuber named Thomas Sanders brought together several different people of different orientations, and one of them was ace. And, you know, she kind of explained what that meant, and I kind of came to think, okay, I kind of identify with this. And, you know, from that day on, you know, I've kind of been identifying as such. You know, it has kind of fluid, I would say. You know, it does seem to fluctuate quite a bit, but that is generally the end of the spectrum that I think I lay on, and that's kind of why I started to kind of consider myself more on the demi spectrum too, just because it's like I'm open to being in a relationship, but I really don't feel any need to, so it's just kind of, you know, I just kind of roll with it. You know, I roll with whatever life throws at me, and you know, I don't really think I need to be in a relationship. I'm very happy just, you know, being on my own. I think if you can find happiness with just being yourself, just doing things yourself, then your life is going to be so much better. Because I really don't think you can really learn to love someone else until you learn to love yourself.
As RuPaul always says.
So you're rolling with it. You're also rolling in the
Rolling
cars, but
in
I'm
the
so
cars.
sorry. I'll see myself out.
That's like, I feel like the perfect philosophy, though, because I feel like you see so many aloe people, especially who seem like they have to have a relationship to find that happiness, and it's like a huge life goal of theirs, which isn't necessarily wrong, but like placing that much of like your self-worth and need on another person or a relationship is just like very risky and like exhausting. So being able to be like, yeah, I'm open to it, but I'm also like chill without it. I'll just be here. Like, that's great.
I found it to be kind of liberating because it's like I don't have to restrict myself to, what I identify as. It's like I can just kind of roll with what life throws at me. And, if something happens where I do find somebody who I would want to be with, I'm more than happy to be with them. But it's not something that I put so much emphasis on, like, this is how I will be happy. Like, this is the only way you can find happiness. I found that through my career and my family and just myself. It is hard sometimes because, I do struggle with some mental health issues like anxiety and depression. But it's just kind
Hell
of,
yeah, me
yeah,
too.
but I don't think being in a relationship is really going to be the one solve all to this problem. And so it's just learning to be happy with yourself is probably the first step towards finding any kind of happiness, if you ask me.
I think so many
Yeah.
people like think that being in a relationship will fix their mental health problems, and it's like, no, you're just bringing your mental health problems into the relationship, and it's just going to impact the relationship. That doesn't
Right.
have to be an inherently bad thing, but if you're like,
Certainly.
oh, if this relationship's gonna fix me, I have some things to say.
As Fred Ar no, as Adam Sandler once said, if you have relationship problems at home, you're going to have them on vacation in Italy.
You're really hitting us
About
with the
right.
quotes here today.
If you haven't seen the SNL sketch of Adam Sandler being like a tour guide, commercial guy, it's he just he's like, you all come to Italy and think that it'll fix you, but if you're depressed at home, you're gonna be depressed on a hike through the mountains. It's very funny, and I think it's relevant here.
Right, sure.
Anyway,
It
sounds like it.
yeah, if you're gonna, whatever. Would you say that your gender identity influences or like came into play with your sexuality and romantic identity at all? I feel like I've asked so many different aspect people this question, and people have such varying answers of like, no, it has nothing to do with it at all, or like my gender like really interacts with it. So I'm curious what you think.
I don't think it does. I kind of see gender and sexuality as two different things. So it's just kind of so I do think that one, can be queer without the other, and vice versa. They can both be, but I don't really see it them as, mutually exclusive. I've always identified as a male. I have questioned that on several times and still do sometimes, but that is kind of more where I lean, and I've not really found that it has an impact on that whatsoever.
Yeah, makes sense. Like I said, I feel like I've heard such varying answers. I always just find it so interesting how many different like opinions and relationships people have in that way within the same community.
Yeah.
Just so
Yeah.
fascinating.
Very much so.
It really is. It's incredible how much of a spectrum I found this thing to be. And, when I was in college, unfortunately, I kind of grew up in a more conservative school environment, and so that
Me
was kind of
too.
shown to be like
Terrible.
nonsense. But it was like, but as I grew older, I kind of came to realize this is actually pretty cool. It's just how much of a spectrum it can be and what people, may identify as. I just think that our differences are what make us who we are. And so seeing how different anyone can be, it's really incredible to see.
Yeah, and like you said, it's just so much more freeing that way.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a pivot that's not really a pivot, but let's talk about racing. how did you get into racing? How were you like, this is what I want to do for my career?
So it's kind of been something I've just always wanted to do. I can't really go back and pinpoint, you know, this was the moment where I want to do this. It's just kind of always been like, I've wanted to do this my whole life. I think I grew up watching the races at home, and I think that's kind of where I started to fall in love with the sport. And, you know, it's not like a lot of other guys who kind of have their parents or, you know, someone else who got them into it. You know, I kind of did it all on my own. And so, I mean, obviously my parents had the races on, so they were kind of like,
they weren't anti-racing to begin with.
No. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was just kind of something I've just always wanted to do. There's no exact moment where I can think of where I decided this is what I want to do with my life.
Sometimes it just is that way.
What is the racing community like? I feel like from the outside, as someone who grew up having family members that watched a lot of racing, I feel like I always had a very stereotypical view of what like a racing fan is, what a driver is like. So I'm curious what the actuality is of like what the racing community looks like, how it works, like how people interact, that kind of thing.
You know, I understand that stereotypical view of it, and it is still true to an extent, but it's definitely starting to shift. You know, I see a lot more race fans who, you know, are willing to be more out about who they are, to support the community, and a lot of drivers and people in the garage are too. So the attitude is definitely shifting. There's definitely still work to be done, but it's going in the right direction.
In terms of you kind of being out as an A-spec person, is that something that, you know, as soon as you realized you were like, yeah, I want to be open about this? Or was that something where you were like, you had to, you know, you made an active decision to be out in your career and in the world? Is that something that you thought about? Or was it just like, no, this is who I am, so I'm going to talk about it?
So for a while I was kind of closeted about it. You know, it probably was about 5 years, between me realizing who I was and then as an ace person. And then when I actually came out, and I would say for a while that was because I didn't think there was a spot for me in the sport, as a queer person. But, as the sport started to move in this right direction and a few drivers came out, and I kind of began to think, maybe there is a spot for me. And obviously last year is when we started to see all these bills being passed, laws being proposed, that targeted the community. And I began to realize, you know, if I want to make a difference, then I need to tell people who I am. And also I don't want to have to hide who I am anymore. And so I kind of made that decision that I want to tell people who I am so I can be in the sport as authentically myself as I can. Mm-hmm. And so I came out June last year, and for the most part, reaction has been pretty good. There have been some instances where I've received threats. You know, I've had to cut a few ties because of this. But at the same time, it's like, those are kind of people who I don't really think I want to work with if they weren't willing to accept me. And at the end of the day, I found it to be mostly a positive, just because it's like, if I can be in the sport and make a difference for other people who may be struggling, then I'm more than happy to do it.
Yeah. Good yeah. for you.
I'm very glad that it has been mostly positive. Obviously, I'm very sorry that some people have been so, so terrible. But, you know, I think you're right, especially as you see the sport moving and other people coming out. Like, that is a great way to kind of like make your stand and to kind of like help the community of racing and the queer community move forward. I think that's very cool.
Thank you.
I think it's also a testament to the people who came out in the racing community before you to like really remind people that people coming out and being open about their identities in these communities, in any communities, it really is so important because visibility is so important to other people.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you realized you were A-spec because you saw an A-spec person in the video. And, you know, perhaps, you know, people coming out in the community made you more confident to come out yourself. And I think it seems so obvious, like, oh, of course visibility matters, but like, it really does. It really does have like it makes a difference that kind of like snowballs and has a really positive effect in the long run.
Absolutely. And I'm thankful that I can be a part of that within the sport. And, you know, I'm hoping that it kind of opens the door for other people who may feel like they want to come out and be themselves, but there may not be a spot for them. I just hope this kind of goes to show that there really is a spot for you in the sport, no matter who you are.
Yeah, I think the visibility is especially so important in sports in general, because they're so often portrayed as like so masculine and so like heteronormative. Like, people are always like, oh, sports fans of any sport are like just these like bros, and it's just all these like hyper masculine men.
And then with racing, you throw in cars, which is another like, oh, masculine, like, yeah. Like, ugh.
Yes. Men in their car. Yeah. And I think like that's not somewhere you would typically go to look for representation. It's probably somewhere you would go to be if someone was like, I don't want to see any gays today, I'll go watch my sports. I feel like I can imagine some terrible people saying that. But that just gives more of an opportunity for people to see queer people everywhere and in places they wouldn't expect. So it's like you watching that YouTube video, you know, you didn't go there searching for something that day and you just happened to see it. And I think that's what visibility does, is it's like, some little kid's going to be watching racing and be like, wait, what's that? And then look it up and be like, wait a second. I think that's neat.
Yeah, I would love it if that happened. You know, I'd love it if I could be part of somebody maybe helping them discover who they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because that kind of happened once. You know, somebody responded to a conversation me and a couple of my friends were having, and they said, this is the direction NASCAR's going in. It kind of is derogatory, and it showed someone wearing a pride flag, you know, in a pride parade. And so I just had to respond, yeah, and don't you forget it.
Yeah, exactly. That's where everything is going. Yep. So let's keep on moving. And hey, maybe you being on this podcast will get some of our A-spec audience into racing, and it's just a convergence of all these things.
That would be great.
And we're just going to have a strong ace army of Michael fans.
Yes.
It would just be so cool for there to be a race and then just all these like ace flags in like the crown set. Oh, that'd be sick.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to see that.
That'd be very good.
Let's make it happen.
Yes.
Yes.
Kind of I just have questions about racing in general, aside from like the identity and all of that. Can you explain how the divisions of racing work? So obviously you've mentioned like all these different types of racing you did, and that it's like the one division of NASCAR. Can you explain like how that works, and like especially as like a career and like moving upwards and stuff?
Yeah, so basically what you have is you have your hometown divisions, which is kind of like along the lines of late models, sprint cars, midgets. You know, those are the kind of divisions that just run at your local Saturday night short track, which you could probably find if you look those up. And then if you're trying to get into NASCAR, then that would basically be, you start out in the ARCA Menards series, which is basically the first feeder division of NASCAR. And then I'm supposed to say if you're good there, but really it's like if you have the money to move up, you go into the Craftsman Truck series, which is considered the first of the three national touring divisions. So once you get there, you're usually pretty well set. And then after that, you usually move on to the NASCAR Xfinity Series, just kind of like the AAA minor league division of NASCAR. And if you can show your worth there or have the money to move up, you go to the Cup Series, which most people know as the top division. So you generally have to go through probably 7 or 8 divisions. You usually start out in go-karts. That's kind of where I started. And so it's just... And a lot of it comes down to money when it comes to moving up. You know, that's just the unfortunate reality of it. You know, if you have enough talent, then maybe it's easier to get that money. But a lot of it just comes from family wealth. So it's harder to do if you don't have that, but it is possible.
Yeah. That makes sense. It reminds me, I don't know, like, how annoying it is to have like a NASCAR and F1 comparison, but I recently started watching the F1 Netflix documentary, and I was just shocked by how much of it was money. They were like, yeah, this kid's dad owns the company, so I guess he'll be our racer. And I was like, but he's not good.
Yeah, it's even more like that in Formula One. I mean, in Formula One, if you don't have the money, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It costs like hundreds of millions of dollars to run per year. So it's always going to be a driver who has to bring funding to the table for that.
Yeah. And that also
really annoying.
I mean, that to bring it back to asexuality, watch her.
Oh, she's going. she's cooking.
I mean, that precludes diversity. It means that, you know, it's always the same people, it's always the same types of people. And, you know, that could make the sport, you know, majority white, but it also can make the sport majority cishet because those are the types of people that are, you know, gaining generational wealth, gaining wealth to do this, and then also feeling comfortable being whoever they are in this situation. And so, you know, the greater the barrier to entry, the less likely it is to be an actual diverse sport. And so it's good to see people like you who are like, hey, actually there is a place for those of us who, you know, aren't the son of whoever owns the company and are fucking queer. Like, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's kind of why I respect some of these guys like Lewis Hamilton so much is because, you know, he doesn't come from wealth. You know, his dad had to scrape by just to get him in karts. And, you know, he managed to impress people with his talent, which got him picked up by McLaren. And obviously that kind of created the pathway to him to Formula One. And so, you know, that's kind of why I have so much respect for Lewis, is just because, you know, not only was he, you know, a black male who managed to make his way to the sport, you know, despite what disadvantages he had financially, and make it there, and not only make it there, become probably the greatest of all time. You know, he showed that there is a spot for anybody in the sport.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to root for someone like that.
Yeah. And if there's somebody there who has a talent, you know, it doesn't matter. It may be harder, but, you know, there is a spot for you in the sport, you know. Yeah. It doesn't have to be this cishet white male. It doesn't have to be exclusively that.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can do it.
I know you said that it feels like it's definitely moving in the right direction in terms of being more inclusive, but does racing still feel like a boys' club?
A little bit less so lately. There has been quite a bit more females getting in the sport. You have drivers like Haley Deegan, Rita Goulette, who's also a queer driver, and she's become a really good friend of mine. Nice. Yeah, you have her. There's several more who are coming up through the ranks right now, like drivers like Isabella Robusto, Kaylee Bryson, Tony Breidinger, Taylor Reimer. There's a lot of great ones who are coming up through the sport, and I think they're going to change the face of the sport for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's very good to hear, because I just remember, like I said, like growing up, my grandpa used to have NASCAR on like every day. It would just be like him in his separate sitting room he had, I guess, just like in his little chair watching NASCAR. And I remember as like a little girl looking at it and being like, this certainly isn't for me. Like, this is my grandpa's like boy time watching all of these men drive cars. So that's like, it's really great to see that within the sport, it's getting more diverse and more inclusive, so that hopefully the fan base can also grow and like be more inclusive in that way too.
Yeah.
NASCAR's been working on trying to increase the diversity within sport. Like, they have their Drive for Diversity program, which is basically a division that they created meant to help minority drivers get the opportunities that they may not be able to get otherwise. And that's created several star drivers, like Kyle Larson came up through that. Bubba Wallace came up through that. Haley Deegan came up through that. Several more that I'm probably not naming off, like Daniel Suarez. There's been quite a few who have been able to make a name for themselves, and that's where they started. And over the past few years, NASCAR has been working with pride organizations to try and increase LGBT visibility within the sport, and that's included like merch, promoting the queer community within the sport.
Have
So
seen
like
some of
definitely,
that. Was it the is the YASCAR shirt real, or did someone else make that? Did NASCAR make
it's
that?
real.
God,
You
I
can go on
need
their
it.
website and find
I
it.
would like to buy
I
it.
love that.
I think it's still available.
Oh my
I
God.
will be checking after this.
Have you ever felt like disappointed in like the failures of the broader community, or have you really just felt a lot of optimism for the way that things are going?
It's mainly been optimism, just because I can definitely tell it's moving in the right direction, and it seems to be moving there pretty quick. Because NASCAR's made it clear that they're not going to back down from this, and that's obviously pushed some of those fans who hold, the more traditionalist views regarding this away, and it's brought some of the more progressive ones in, and I think that's going to change the face of the sport for years to come, and that kind of gives me that optimism. There is definitely still a lot of work to be done. There have been some failures within the sport when it comes to promoting this. So like the All-Star race last year, where they brought a certain politician out who has a history of very homophobic, anti-LGBT laws being passed, which NASCAR did own up to that. So there was at least that. But it's just kind of learning to call out where the failure is so that they can continue to improve from that is where I think you need to put the focus on. And I think because of that, we're just helping push the sport in the right direction.
I'm really glad that they are owning up to it, even as like some of the more conservative fans are getting annoyed with it. I know, like, I've seen in the news a lot this week about the LA
I was
Dodgers Pride
literally just
Night.
about to bring that up.
So for anyone listening who hadn't heard, the LA Dodgers are the baseball team for Los
One of
Angeles,
them, yes.
and they were, oh, sure,
There's
they have
multiple.
five, I
There's
guess.
multiple. It's the big
Sure.
one. It's the big boy.
It's the big one, I guess. I don't
It's
fucking
the
know.
big boy.
I can't. So they were having like their June, they're planning their June Pride Night or whatever, and then they uninvited
They were going to honor the
yes, the Sisters
sisters.
of Preserving Indulgence?
Sisters of
Yeah, it
Indulgence?
was something like
Sister,
that.
yeah. Who is they're like a group of queer trans drag queen
Sisters of
nuns.
Perpetual Indulgence.
Indulgence, yeah. So they're like, yeah, queer, trans, drag queen, nuns, which is just rad as hell. Just sick as fuck. But so they were going to honor
Yeah,
them, and then a bunch of
they were not
nasty.
only gonna have them there, but they were going to honor them for the work they've done in the community. It's San Francisco based, but there is an LA faction.
Like decades of work. This is a very like historic organization.
And then there was blowback from Catholic people who were homophobic and were like, "No, this is horrible." So they uninvited them. And that's, I mean,
Stinky.
yeah, and if you think about like LA, it's like, you know, it's supposed to be this, you know, progressive, whatever. And it's like, it almost feels like sometimes, like, the further along you are in the journey, like, of being accepting to queer identities, like, the more disappointing it is when they fuck up.
100%. Because
And
I feel like of all of the baseball teams, LA is not the first one I would have been like, what,
But apparently the Dodgers have a history of shit like this, from what I've heard. And it's
Great. Oh,
yeah.
really?
And
Wow.
so like
Excellent.
okay, I saw like one tweet, but so don't hold me to
Cite
anything.
your sources.
But like, you know, it's extra disappointing. It's extra disappointing.
Me reporting the
Me
news.
reporting the news. But then for a sport like NASCAR, you know, because they are maybe less far into the journey, like every win is such a huge win, and you know that's exciting for the community. And obviously we can't expect every sport and every community to be at the exact same place in the process as, you know, any softball full of lesbians. Like, of course they're going to be further. Of course they're going to be further in the process when.
Kickball, only gay leagues. Never seen a straight person play kickball in my life.
I'm sure they have, but
I haven't seen it. Not in front of me.
okay.
Anyway, yeah, it's really good to hear that they are like owning up to that. Cause I think, especially when money gets involved and people get afraid of like fans becoming unfans and like, you know, corporate sponsorships dropping out because of taking that stand, yeah. It's really cool to see them sticking up to it and being like, you know what, I don't care if I lose however many fans. Because you know you're going to gain them back.
Well, and now that I've Googled what the name of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence was, apparently the LA LGBT Center and LA Pride they are no longer being associated with the Dodgers Pride Night because you got to stand with your sisters.
Absolutely.
So true. What drama? This is the only sports drama I care about. Dean is my partner. He's really into sports, and he knows that if he wants to like talk to me about football or baseball or basketball, he has to bring me some sort of drama about like someone who's cheating on their wife or got arrested or something. And other than that,
I thought you were going to say cheating in the sport, but both.
That also happens, probably.
Definitely, yes.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Who's to doping, say? Do people Kayla. Cheat doping. In? Do people? Doping. Do people cheat Deflategate. In racing? Yes, yeah, I know about Deflategate. I guess that's a silly question. Of course they cheat. Everyone cheats, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's usually with the cars. You know, that's why you have pre-race and post-race tech. So now it's like if you go through tech and they find something illegal, they'll disqualify you. So basically you'll be put to last and lose all your points.
What sort of things are illegal? asking for a friend.
Yeah. So if they find something like in the motor that maybe that might give it an advantage, that is a huge no-no. That'll obviously get you DQ'd. There's also a certain height you have to meet. So if it's too low or too high, that'll also be a penalty. You know, if they discover something on the car that they don't like. So like last year, there was a couple drivers who got disqualified because there was a piece of clear tape on the nose, which even that in itself can actually really increase downforce and make the car faster in the turns and give you an advantage. Wow. So that's something else they'll be caught for. And there is an anti-doping rule in NASCAR too. So any drivers who were caught using any banned substances will obviously be suspended indefinitely and forced to go through the program.
Damn.
Clear tape.
That's crazy.
Who'd have thunk? Clear tape.
Who knew?
Who'd have thunk? That's aerodynamics.
I guess it makes, like, when I think about, like, when I did competitive swim and, like, for the big meets, all of the guys would, like, shave their bodies, like, clean because it was, like, any amount of hair is going to drag them back from their milliseconds swimming.
No hair on your car. Get that hair off the car.
Hair, it probably, hairy car probably would make slow.
Yeah.
You're going so fast that the hair is not going to stick.
That's true.
That's so. You know, I guess.
I mean, but if it's growing out of
a girl can dream.
Anyway. Okay. Yeah. delightful. Kayla, do you have any other questions that you want to ask Michael?
Let me look at my little list of questions.
Oh, I do. I have one. Okay. Are there any stereotypes you would like to dispel about, you know, being a queer person in the racing community, about the racing community in general? Anything?
So probably one of the stereotypes I'd like to remove is just the fact that you have to be a very masculine male to make it in the sport, because that is still kind of prevalent. And so it would be nice to see, okay, there is room for maybe people who are more soft-sided, which I really am. You know, if you can show that this sport is open to everybody, you're just going to get more people there and it's just going to improve the sport as a whole. And so I don't understand why there's so many people within the sport that kind of push that kind of narrative, because all it's doing is holding you back.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any advice to A-Specs or just queer people in general who might be interested in racing other than be born into money?
Yeah.
Yeah. Always great advice.
Yeah. I would just say that just know that there is a place for you here. You know, if you need anyone to talk to, I will be here. There's several people who will be here. I'm always willing to listen to other people. You know, I've had a few people within the queer community, you know, tell me about how glad they are to see someone like me in. And every time that happens, it just makes my day. So, if there's anybody out there who's struggling in the sport and you want to be who you are in sport, there is a place for you.
There's a stereotype that queer people can't drive, but you know what?
Not true.
We are here to dispel that on
Michael
this
is
day.
out here changing minds. We can't, well, I'm not great at
Changing minds
driving,
and
but
changing
Michael
lives.
can.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Sorry, Kayla, I asked you if there was anything you wanted to add, and then I added two more things. Do you actually have
No,
anything you want to add?
that's. I mean, I would like to ask Michael if there's any topics we haven't covered or anything that you like really wanted to get out there to the people.
I think that's kind of been what I really want to put out there. I think we kind of got over, what we need to change in the sport, what direction we need to go, and what it's like to be someone who identifies as A-spec in the sport.
Yeah, I feel like our thesis for today is anyone can do a race.
Anyone.
Anyone can do a race.
Not prop.
Well, if you're willing to put in the work and learn how to drive,
Yeah.
then
Yeah,
yes,
if you
there
can
is.
drive. Okay,
Yeah.
anyone who can drive good can do a
Yeah,
race.
probably not if
Yes.
you're like a
Yes.
dog. You know.
Did I tell you the newest story about the dog,
You
Sarah?
did, and
I
then the
did.
next day I heard about it on my podcast.
Well, I'll tell the rest of everyone. I recently saw a news story. Okay, I told you. Okay, yeah, I remember telling you. Okay, so there was recently a news story that this guy was pulled over for speeding. Maybe he should be in racing. I don't know. This guy was pulled over for
But he
speeding
was
in
drunk,
the.
so I don't think it's generally
Let
recommended
me
that you
finish.
race
I wasn't
drunk.
there yet. I
Yeah.
wasn't there yet. This guy was pulled over for speeding. Yes, he was also drunk. And as the cop was like walking up to his window, he saw the guy trying to switch seats with his dog so that it looked like the dog was driving and he was in the passenger seat. And then the cop was like, "What are you doing?" So the guy got out and started running.
Yeah, he was like,
And when
"Hey,
he
what's up?" And the
caught
guy ran away, and they apprehended him like 20 feet away.
Immediately. And then they were like, "Dude, what the hell?" And he goes, "I wasn't the one driving."
Way to throw your dog
Sir.
under the bus. Jeez.
Oh my
The
God,
news
how drunk do
story.
you have to be to
I
do that?
literally, the news story I read though did clarify that the dog was not arrested. No, nothing happened. The dog, no criminal charges against
Thank God.
the
I was
dog.
so concerned.
Do you think that people who race are more prone to getting speeding tickets, or you're like, I'll actually go regular here. I race for my job. I don't need to go fast right now.
It
I recognize this is a stupid question.
depends on the kind of environment. Dirt track racing, yes. NASCAR,
Okay.
no.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got plenty of friends in the dirt track racing community who get speeding tickets constantly.
If you get
Or if they don't, they should be.
too many points on your, because like you can't race without a license, right? So like if you got
Well,
so
technically,
many.
you can drive in the lower NASCAR divisions when you're 15. So, actually,
Oh
no.
yeah, I guess that's true.
But I
Okay,
think
but
if
what would
you're.
happen if your license got you got so many points on your license that it got taken away? Would you get kicked out of the sport?
That I don't know.
Interesting.
I honestly don't know about that anymore because I know it used to be that you had to have a valid license, but I don't think that's the case anymore.
That's a
They
little
undid
horrifying.
Unless you're like
That? That's
15.
a little terrifying.
It is. I mean, if you go into like the late models, which are still full-size stock cars, there are drivers who are 12 and 13 running those.
I don't like
And
that.
so, yeah,
That scares
neither
me.
do I, honestly. But yeah, I don't know what would happen if you got too many points on a license. I do know that if you're caught in serious trouble with the law, NASCAR may suspend you.
That
So
makes sense.
that could be something. So like if you're caught reckless driving, then you are subject to a penalty from NASCAR because that could be considered actions detrimental to the sport.
Yeah.
So it's possible, I guess, but I don't know if it would just be multitude of speeding tickets that would do that.
Probably not. That does seem to get back. I've recently learned like what invented NASCAR, and it was like,
That you made that sound like a passive thing that happened.
it
NASCAR was just
was.
invented.
Okay, listen though, kind of, because it was when it was Prohibition area, and
Area?
it was the
Yep.
Prohibition area. It was the.
Are you good?
I just think I'm so charming. It was the Prohibition era when they were moonshining and bootlegging, and so people had to be like drivers to move moonshine, but they had to be fast enough drivers that if the cops came, they could drive away. And that was how NASCAR started. The people who did the bootlegging were the OG NASCAR drivers. So really, if you're speeding, you're just getting back to the heart.
Back to the roots of NASCAR.
Yes. Yes.
Like a little, right? Like it was just people being illegal. So maybe all NASCAR drivers should be criminals.
What are you saying about Michael?
I'm saying Michael should be a criminal, not that he is a criminal.
Yeah.
Listen,
okay,
if you're saying NASCAR is open to everyone, then it should be open to
everyone. Takeaway from this podcast is, Michael, you need to do more
crime. Everybody knows, I do not condone criminal activity, so.
Be ace, do crime.
Be ace, do crime. Ace, do crime.
Who's to say?
Except on Ace Visibility Day. That's when you're visible.
Yeah, that's the day that they can see.
Don't do it that day.
You gotta be careful.
Yeah, don't do it that day.
On that note, Kayla, what is our poll for this week?
That's such a good question. Maybe.
Should you do crime?
Should you do crime? No. I want to know, like, how many people are, like, racing fans. Not racing. Most of them probably aren't drivers. That seems
like an unrealistic expectation.
Unrealistic expectation of our listeners. But I want to know how many people that listen or follow are, like, active racing fans.
Yeah.
I want to see the intersection between the A-Spec community and the racing community.
Yeah, we can have an answer for, like, big fan, an answer for, like, casual fan, an answer for no, and an answer for I've never heard of this.
Yeah. I do know some people have been talking to me about F1 since I've started talking about it on the podcast. So I know there's some because they were telling me the tea. So
delightful. All right. Great. Kayla, what is your beef and your juice this week?
Oh.
The problem is that we recorded our last episode 2 days ago. So, like, what has happened?
What's happened
then?
In 2 days? Well, my beef is my brain, and when it does decide to do a spiral and be mentally ill, what a bother.
Gosh, I hate when my brain does that.
God darn it. My juice is I'm almost done with my book, and it's going well. It's
reading a book?
Been stressed. I'm not writing a new one.
I was just, the way you phrased that
imagine,
was weird.
Imagine I wrote a second book undercover without your knowledge. How mad would you be?
I would be confused before anything.
Yeah, that's fair. Me too. No, but I'm almost done reading it, and it's been very stressful because everyone's in a war.
Is this the same book you've been talking about for like weeks?
Don't worry about it. It's very long and stressful. Very long and stressful. And as I told you, I've been having a problem hyperfixating on it. So if I read it for too long, I feel physically ill because, again, my brain is bad. Anyway, it's going well. People are dying, but not who I was worried about. And maybe I looked at the last page just to make sure. Because it made me feel better just to make sure that, like, the people I didn't, that couldn't die or I would have died didn't die.
I have a habit of doing that with my manga, so.
It just made me, it makes my anxiety better to know. I don't know the full extent of what's going to happen. I just know it's going to be a happy ending. You know, and that's what I needed.
I do find.
It's either that or with me. It takes away my anxiety, but my depression goes right up when I find out who dies. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The duality.
I find that I'm always tempted to, like, read ahead to, like, the last line of, like, a chapter. So sometimes if I'm reading, I will, like, if I'm on, like, the last pages, I will literally just, like, cover it up with my hand. Because.
See, but I had to know.
Anyway.
It was literally causing mental problems.
Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm talking to my therapist about it. Don't worry.
I'm glad you looked at it then.
Thank you.
Okay, my beef is concrete poles. My juice is... What is my juice, Kayla?
Me.
Shush.
Love of your life.
My juice is...
You sent me some possum stickers. That can be your juice.
I did send Kayla some possum stickers just like randomly.
Yeah, so if you saw my Instagram story where I was asking who sent me them, it was Sarah.
Me.
We learned.
I just sent her some possum stickers. They were fun and funky fresh.
It was good.
Right. All right, Michael, what is your beef and your juice this week?
Okay, so my beef is probably bosses who only do what's best for them and completely neglect their employers or their employees. That's something I've unfortunately kind of had to deal with this week. Right. I'm not going to say who, but that
we hate them.
My juice, probably the anime that got me out of that funk.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
What anime was it?
So it's usually if I'm in a funk, a nice funny slice of life will kind of get me going.
Hell yeah.
So Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid has probably become my comfort anime. It's funny, you know, I love, you know, the animation, the acting in it. It's just, you know, it picks you up out of a bad mood. And there's also like I've been watching the new season of Tanikawa, which was really good. Yes, I know I'm ace, but I do love rom-coms.
Same.
Yes.
We also do.
A good rom-com slaps.
Yes. Yes. Well, I love rom-com anime, not really rom-com. Then again, I really only watch anime now, if I'm being honest.
Fair.
I love that for you.
So, yeah. So, Tanikawa, Miss Nagatoro, Run a Girlfriend, just any of them. I find those will always pick up my mood. So if you have a rough day at work, just go home, turn one of those on. You'll be happy again in no time.
I love
it. And it's much cheaper than a therapist.
True.
Very true.
That was a joke. I do recommend therapy.
Therapy and anime together. The perfect storm. All right. Wonderful. All right. Well, you can tell us about your beef, your juice, your love of NASCAR, your hatred of clear tape on the front of cars on our social media at SoundsFakePod. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/SoundsFakePod, if for some reason you want to support us there. Sarah from the future, hit us with the patrons.
Hello, it's Sarah from the future, the far future even. I would like to begin our patron read this week by apologizing to our patrons. Why, you ask? Well, for those regular listeners of our pod, you know that the pod releases on Sundays, but for patrons, $5 and higher, on occasion, $2 and higher, if we hit the wrong button, they get the pod a day early on Saturday. So if you're like, wow, whew, I want my pod one day early, that's a perk. Well, sort of. Because here's the thing. It is Saturday, and I am just now editing the pod, which means it's late, and it's been late a couple times recently. And I would just like to apologize for that. Also because we literally recorded this last Sunday. Listen. I am mentally ill, and I am doing my best, and it's not my fault that my best is not that good. Okay, anyway, well, thank you for those of you who do support us in spite of this. Our $5 patrons who we are promoting this week are Jolly Lizbert, Julianne, Catherine Bailey, Kelly, and Layla. Our $10 patrons, first of all, we have a new $10 patron. It's Ben McLeod. Spelled M-A-C-L-E-O-D. But Ben is an £8.50 patron, which is, of course, $10 in the U.S. currency. I know an American whose last name is McLeod, and it's pronounced like McCloud. But I don't know, do you watch Ben be like, no, it's MacLeod. I don't know what you guys are doing in the U.K. Well, thank you, anyway, for becoming a patron. Let me know what you would like to promote. Our other $10 patrons are Arkness, who would like to promote the Trevor Project, Allison McGuire, who would like to promote... Oh, wait, sorry. Sometimes we struggle. This is correct. Allison, who would like to promote Arden Graham and Rave Stoof, Benjamin Ibarra, who would like to promote Tabletop Games, and I literally just checked to make sure Benjamin Ibarra was still a patron, because I was like, look, Benjamin Ibarra has been around for so long, I cannot believe... Maybe they're not a patron anymore and we just missed it. No, you are. Thank you, Benjamin Ibarra. I'd play some tabletop games in our honor. And Boston Smith, who would like to promote their YouTube and TikTok at Your Buddy Boston. Our other $10 patrons are David Harris, Derek and Carissa L. Bitter, my Aunt Jeannie, Kula, Maggie Capalbo, Martin Chazelle, Maddie, Potato, Purple Haze, Barefoot Backpacker, Ruby, Song of Storm, The Steve, and Zirkle Teo. Our $15 patrons are Andrew Hillam, who would like to promote the Invisible Spectrum podcast, Changeling and Alexia's Cat, who would like to promote Starship Changeling.net, Click for Caroline, who would like to promote Ace of Hearts, Dia Chappelle, who would like to promote twitch.tv/MelodyDia, Hector Murillo, who would like to promote Friends, Supportive, Constructive, and Help You Grow as a Better Person, John Young. Pause. Math, who would like to promote catching up on the podcast after 2 years. Nathaniel White, who would like to promote NathanielJWaitDesigns.com. Kayla Zantina, who would like to promote KateMaggartArt.com. Sarah Jones, who's at TurnLolly Everywhere. Our $20 patrons are Sabrina Hawk, Merry Christmas, and Dragonfly, who would like to promote the fact that when I do this with Kayla on the line, it's and I kind of go a little crazy. It's charming. But when I'm by myself, it's just manic and concerning. Anyway, okay, back to the past. Bye.
Thanks, Sarah from the future. That was so helpful. Before we go, love Sarah from the future. Michael, where can the children of the internet find you, support you? What can they do to be your biggest supporter?
Okay, so obviously just following would be a great way to do it. You can follow me on Twitter at MichaelKlein10A. It would be Michael Klein Racing, which is my handle on everything else, but that was already taken. So,
how rude.
So it's at MichaelKlein10A on Twitter and at Michael Klein Racing on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. We also have a fundraiser set up on openfender.com where anyone can donate any amount and we'll put you on our car, we'll send merch, and it'll help us out. You basically be a part of our program. It's kind of like a Patreon for motorsports. So if anyone's interested in doing that, just head over to openfender.com and look up Michael Klein. And if you want to be a part of our program, feel free to sign up and you can make a donation of any amount.
That's cool.
That is very fun. I will put all of those links in the show notes of this episode and I'll put it on our socials too. So you can go give Michael your money.
Do it.
I hate to ask that, but it's unfortunately what racing.
No, that's what racing is. And listen, if we want to fulfill our dream of being at a NASCAR race with you racing and all of us with ace flags in the crowd, then we're going to have to give you our money
first so that we can all fulfill
our dream.
Exactly. Exactly.
We just have to.
All right. Delightful. Well, everyone, please follow Michael, support Michael, bring ace flags to NASCAR races. Even if Michael's not there, just do it. How do we end this podcast? Okay. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you, Michael, so much for joining us and for being patient as we have tried to schedule this for the past
for
three
years.
Centuries. Yeah. Tune in next Sunday for more of us in your ears.
And until then, take good care of your cows.